Welcome to Create the Movement podcast. Create the Movement is an online marketing team focused on collaborating with law firms and businesses nationwide. Visit us at createthemovement.com to discover how we can help you create a movement.
So thanks for hopping on here, Sheldon. We're with Sheldon. He is the director at Aquanode Interactive. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
And would you mind just telling me a bit about how you got to where you are now? I know you have an interesting backstory. I'd love for you to kind of share it again.
Yeah, sure. I used to build 3D drawings and markup for a military contractor. And just by complete fluke, I was sharing an office with a woman who used to take care of databases. And she got pregnant, went on a maternity leave, and I inherited database just because I sat the closest. And this thing, I mean, it used to break every week. I got sick of that, so I eventually rebuilt it. And from there, it was a really easy path. Got into databases, got into really complex app development, and that translated really well onto the web. At a time when there really wasn't a lot of that type of service around, you had the big ERP tools, and then you had Access, and there wasn't that middle layer, and that's where we've been working and toiling ever since.
Man, that's awesome. How long has Aquanode been a company?
First registered in 2004, and at that time it was really about freelance, pocket money for me. Right. 2007 though was when we went kind of full time with the business, and 2008 was our first hire. So I'd give it a pretty solid decade now of continuous activity in a very, wouldn't say serious, we're not that serious around here, but a fairly formal structure with clients and a lot of projects moving through the shop.
Wow. So you had your first hire in 2008, you said?
Yeah, and he's still here, believe it or not.
That is loyalty. let me ask, what do you look for when you're hiring people to join your team?
Top two things: work ethic and aptitude.
Could you go a little deeper on that?
Yeah, for sure. We look for people willing to work hard. You should hear in that or extrapolate from that, not entitled people. We find kids coming out of big cities to be much more entitled than those coming out of a more rural, smaller setting. And I think that's, a big factor of their education and what they've been told all through their school careers. And as far as aptitude goes, we don't really care how well you know and understand PHP today. It's how well you can learn it moving forward, because for the most part, whatever you have been doing is going to be different when you start working with us. We have our own way of doing things, of course. And apart from that, the industry changes so much and so fast that I guarantee what you're doing today is going to be different than what you'll be doing for us in 2 years. Yeah. And that's just the nature of the business. So your ability to learn kind of trumps what you have amassed to date. And that's something really important to us.
That's awesome. That's a scary thought. We run a digital marketing company, and oftentimes I find myself even driving into work, I'm like, well, in 2 years, like, will we be a completely different company doing a completely different thing,
And I think you have to be if you want to be profitable.
Definitely.
And I'll give you an idea. Way back when we started to do an e-commerce website would run, $20,000 to $50,000. And back then we had to build the cart. We had to do all of the checkout. We had to build all the receipts. We had to build the inventory management. We had to do the shipping integrations. I mean, all that stuff was one-off custom build every single time. And now, $20 a month at Shopify takes care of all of it.
Yep.
So clearly we can't continue to exist on e-commerce builds, right? So you have to continually change your offering. And the industry somewhat dictates that for you in terms of saying, well, there's a plugin for that now, so you no longer have to pay a professional to build the stuff. And that means you end up offering new and better products, or you use the plugins and you do it a whole lot faster, and then you're playing the volume game, which is not something that we typically do. But, you know, we've moved away from those types of custom website development projects, and we're doing mostly custom applications, and the evolution there has been into mobile. So, you know, if we're doing a custom management tool for a business, we now have the companion apps that go on a phone for the roaming sales or service people. And, you know, the ability to have everyone working in the same platform in real time turns out is still a valuable thing. But, you know, 5 or 10 years out, maybe that'll be another $20 a month service, and maybe we'll be selling connected shirts, you know, right, that do something entirely different. Who knows? But yeah, you kind of have to accept that the industry is going to change over time. And if you don't, you will probably get killed.
Yeah. And I had this question written down, is basically, where do you see technology going? You know, and you know, there's a big surge for with virtual reality. And I found myself thinking about, you know, how are we going to run ads for virtual reality? You know, do we have to do 3D development? Where do you see technology heading?
Like, hilarious.
What excites you about new technology?
I love the question. We were actually just talking about this subject, and you know, I think the advertising world in digital is very saturated, and then you throw in the tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of SEO providers and social media people. I think all of them in 5 years are in for a rude awakening, as we see, you know, Facebook dumping just a ton of money and capital and interest into Oculus. I do think that the social landscape is going to move into VR very quickly. And by that, I mean, over the next 10 years, I think as hardware comes down and as the requirements for extra pieces of equipment goes away, you know, when I can run all of the VR tools directly from the phone that I carry in my pocket all the time,
right,
the barriers to entry get a lot lower. And to come back to your question, the ad space then has to pivot to work in that environment. So I think if you set about, and this is something we're actually talking about right now, building an ad space for a 3D environment.
Yeah.
Where it's not only integrated into that space, but it's also contextual, which means three people in the same 3D environment sharing an experience together will see three different pieces of advertising right, as it relates to their individual lives, as parsed from a Facebook graph or from their search history or whatever the context is. That becomes extremely powerful, because now we can sell a single ad space, keeping the interface and the UI very uncluttered and clean, while making extremely efficient usage of the actual piece itself, and reaching people in a very contextual manner. So I think that there's a lot of work to be done there, but I do think that it will have to go there. The ad industry has to follow technology, and I do think that my kids will live primarily in a 3D virtual world, and I don't think that's limited to the 3D interface. I think you're going to see a lot more augmented opportunities where, you know, where Google Glass failed, I think that there'll be something that takes its place, and you'll start to see, you know, the integration, the Internet of Things taking over in all areas of our lives, to the point where I can be at the grocery store and asking my fridge what ingredients I already have for a recipe, and literally having that sent to the grocery teller who's picking my order for me. I just see a whole bunch of those types of integrations taking over, and ads and advertising will have to fit that ecosystem if that model for revenue is going to continue to be lucrative for those that run it.
Totally. Where do you think privacy comes into play here? Is that what has to happen? You know, what has to happen for people to accept this world?
I think it's a generational thing. That's probably the single most scary topic when you truly realize to what extent you no longer have privacy. It is absolutely terrifying.
The Google Home, what is it? Sonos or no, that's a different one.
But Sonos is streaming audio.
Yes.
But I'm thinking of, you know, Samsung with the microphones and the remotes that are potential listening all the time and then serving smart commercials to you.
Yeah.
The impact of that type of technology and some of the other usage of that technology is really terrifying. I don't like it. I don't see a way around it other than, you know, regressing to the point where maybe you no longer have the internet at home. Right. But, you know, you look at any domestic vehicle and you've got OnStar or you've got some other service in your car listening all the time. And I was joking with one of my colleagues here a little while ago where it's like, you know, I always appreciated having the ability to have a high-speed car chase. But in today's vehicles, I can't because there's not going to be a high-speed car chase. It's going to be a call from a police officer to OnStar, and 30 seconds later, the chase is over.
Right.
Electronically. And right. So you do give up a lot in convenience and privacy. Sorry, you give up a lot in privacy in order to achieve that convenience. And while my generation and your generation, Dom, might resent that, I actually think that my kids' generation, you know, growing up in a Instagram, Twitter, Facebook world and being incented to share as it relates to being socially accepted, I think privacy goes away. I think that they won't even have those concerns to the point where, you know, the old Tom Cruise movie Minority Report actually becomes kind of a funny, scary representation of where we might actually be.
I completely agree with you. Okay, let's move away from that. I'm getting anxious here. my anxiety is kicking in. Here's a question. If money wasn't an option, what would you work on personally?
Oh, that's interesting. I'd probably still be building web apps, but I'd only be doing stuff that fixed really big pain points.
Really?
And I see them as small everyday problems that I just don't understand why stuff doesn't exist already. I'll give you an example. I get into my car and for some reason I have to take a device with me in order to play the same music list that I have at home. And the car's got an internet connection. My device has an internet connection. The two only talk together if I tell them to, but I don't understand why I can't have a LAN running in my car that I sync from my home or talk to and connect as part of my network. You know, why does that not exist yet?
Right.
You know, my kids at home can stream all kinds of stuff. I get into the vehicle and they can't do anything anymore. All of the movies on my network storage are gone. That seems like a low hanging fruit. I also wonder why all of my devices are cohesively working through a single data exchange network. And that seems like another thing that, you know, an open architecture that is universally accepted would fix.
So you spend each day focusing on conveniencing yourself more.
Focusing on the things that get on my nerves. Yeah. Exactly.
That's awesome. That's an awesome response. What do you think of when you hear the word successful?
Being able to pay one's bills while doing the exact type of activities we just talked about. Not beholden to a client need, rather one that serves either my or a greater interest.
Man.
For profit, of course.
Sure, sure. clients tend to take a lot of energy.
And more importantly, they have their own interests, as they should, as it relates to their businesses. And I'm not at all embarrassed to tell you that sometimes those interests are not the same as mine.
Right.
You know, where in the absence of revenue, I might not be working for you. Where some of the other things that I'm very interested in, lots of money, no money, I'm still going to be interested in them. And that's, I think, where the primary difference would come in.
How do you find that balance personally? Like, how do you find time to work on what pays the bills and then work on what what satisfies you?
I don't, and that's a great question. What I've gotten much, much better at is finding a good relationship with a profit margin. The people perhaps working on projects I'm not terribly personally interested in, but I'll take those and I'll work with them as long as they're good people and they're serving a good cause, even if it's not near and dear to me. And then I have this amazing team that I can task stuff to,
mm-hmm.
That free me up to get back to the things that I actually want to do.
How big is your team now?
We're sitting on 11 people at the moment, and you know, that might fluctuate by one or two people over the next 6 months.
Wow, that's awesome, man. And all these people, they have those traits you discussed, this good work ethic and great aptitude.
Yeah, it's kind of a prerequisite. And on top of that, they have to fit our corporate culture.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, you've got to have a bit of a competitive streak, or you won't survive on the foosball table. you have to be fairly social, willing to drink the Kool-Aid, so to speak. We had a really good candidate actually not too long ago on paper. Gentleman was about 55 years old, and we met him. And again, great technical skill set, had the aptitude, but no culture fit. It was very obvious that we would be bumping heads on a frequent basis, and for that reason, we couldn't offer him a position. So culture really matters. The more you fit in, the less you will clash. The less you will clash, the better everyone's experience with and around you will be. So we really do find that important. And then to add on to that, you become friends with the people you work with, as you should. You spend more time with them than your spouse in most cases. So the more you become friends and the more that culture fit exists, the harder it is for you to leave. And you don't want to leave because you work with your friends, and that has helped us to keep a very low turnover rate.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, with our interview process, we kind of send a candidate through, I guess you'd say, three rounds of interviews where they pretty much meet everyone on the team. And then we collectively come together and decide yay or nay. I think it's like you're saying, if you have a small team, you want to keep it tight. I remember the owner of Sear Interactive, Will Reynolds, he always talked about how he only wanted to hire only 20 people, no more. And ironically enough, now he's at like 150 people. But he realized, and it's really cool, he realized when he walked through his business and saw somebody who he wasn't sure of their name or didn't know what they liked or something like that, he knew it was time for him to step down as CEO and get back into the actual business. So I commend you on that, on keeping the team tight and really holding culture.
That's a really interesting thought. I mean, there's certainly opportunity even at my size to get to know everyone better. And at 100 people, yeah, you do. You give up some of that interaction and some of that personal connection that you can form. And I think that's horrible. And even to the extent that while I have an office in our office space, the door's got to be open all the time just because I want to hear what's happening on the floor. And that's how I stay connected to the problems and the wins and the personal issues that are floating around. And you need to know that stuff. It gives you the context for everything that's happening. And when you become disconnected, that's when you start to have a lot of problems.
Yeah, totally, man. As we wrap up, I have a few more questions. In August of 2015, you tweeted, progress. I'm not going to pull any bad tweets. Okay.
Oh my. So I tweet once a year. Who knows what this quote's going to be?
You said progress is measured by what you no longer have to think about. I thought that was interesting. Are there any quotes that you live by or that you often think of?
That's a great quote. I'm sure I stole that from someone a whole lot smarter than me. but you know, it's awesome when I no longer have to worry about anything silly and ridiculous. That's instant progress, and it's the stuff that we take for granted that really measures innovation. And, you know, if you think about electricity or the light bulb, you don't think about that stuff until there's a blackout, and then it's like, you know, life is over. Like, I can't get on the internet. I can't watch TV. I can't do anything. And it's because it's become so transparently a part of your day that you don't even think about it. As far as other quotes go, there were a couple of really good ones from Steve Jobs, and I don't quite remember the wording, but you know, he essentially had the mindset to not be afraid of breaking the mold. You know, don't stress about being a square peg with a circular hole. The problem is not your idea potentially, it's the intention of society and of a marketplace to force you to conform to today's needs. Whereas he was always, I think, very, very staunch about saying, you know, I'm going to sell you what you need tomorrow, not what you're asking for today. And there was a great quote from Henry Ford way back in the day after he had built his first couple of cars. And essentially he said, you know, if I had just built what people were asking for, you'd have ended up with faster horses, not a car.
I love it.
Because that's what people wanted. So, you know, I really do enjoy those types of quotes. And I think that they have a lot in common, albeit they were from different times. But it's always about, you know, to come back to what we were earlier talking about, you know, where's the industry going? I do think there's a lot of interest on my part and in the quotes that I enjoy around looking at the needs of tomorrow versus whatever people are asking for today.
That's awesome, man. All right, so a couple quick questions. If you were to name your favorite book, what would it be?
Favorite book? I have to give that one today, and it's going to change frequently, but today it's Essentialism.
Essentialism?
Yeah, great book. I'll save you from reading it. All you need to know is protect the asset, you being the asset. That is a mantra for prioritizing your time.
Got it. What's your favorite podcast to listen to? Or do you have lots?
I have a lot. I really do. I like the Digital Marketer podcast. Uh-huh. I also listen to Revenue Love from Jonathan Hinshaw. He's a buddy of mine who puts together a podcast on a fairly frequent basis. Obviously, I got to listen to yours, Dom, get caught up with everything you've been putting out into the world. Yeah. And I listen to a couple of financial podcasts as well, just to keep on top of the business news and a lot of the financial markets and the movements around you know, the various economies and politics of the day.
Awesome. Cool deal. And my last question was basically, what's the best business advice you've ever received?
Follow your gut.
Follow your gut?
Yeah. And it's not even business advice. I call it life advice. Just follow your gut. If something feels like a waste of time, it probably is.
Yeah. So hard.
You know, including, you know, most of the projects that we take, that, you know, the best client is not just the one with money. It's got a lot more. And it sounds like common sense when I'm saying it, but, you know, so often as agency owners, you know, we have bills to pay, we'll take on whatever comes our way. That is not a good approach, nor is it one that we want to constantly perpetuate.
Right.
Trust your gut, follow it. And if your gut's saying, you know what, I need to be building apps and tools that decrease the annoyance in my life, then take your career in that direction. And my gut is saying 10 years from now, WordPress will be a horrible blip in the internet's past. 3D, it's true, that's my opinion. I think 3D and virtual ad space will be a very interesting, very hot industry, and I think Internet of Things is going to be massive. Yeah. And I want to be on the south side of those things as they come up, and that's where my gut is going to take me.
Sheldon, thank you so much for your time, man. You can check Sheldon out at aquanode.com, and we'll put it in the show notes. Right.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And thanks so much for your time, man.
Hey, Dom, thanks for having me. Happy to come back anytime.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Create the Movement podcast. Visit us at createthemovement.com to discover how we can help you create a movement.